Hey everyone, I'm Madonna Guy, and this is The Natural Alternative. Welcome, Vicky Tate. Great to have you back again. So we're about to delve into the world of orthobionomy. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Madonna. It is great to be here. I love the work that you do in the community, helping people understand about their health, what they need to know, what they've been told, which is foo-foo,
Yes, just a little bit. Yes. And
and
I
give
hear
people
you've
some
just
hope.
retired after 50 years as a nurse.
Yes, I finally got my. They sent me a message yesterday, the day before, saying your name is no longer on the nursing and midwives board list. And I went, yes, I've done it.
So tell us about what you really love.
Okay, so what I really love is getting people better because the medical system, as many of you may know and have experienced, is not really about getting you better, but about getting you to become a lifelong client of the system.
Talking my language.
And I saw this happen in my active nursing days when I was working in surgical wards, and people would come in for an exploratory. They're just going in, having a look around, messing things up, and then going, "Oh, well, now you're on pain tablets, and but we don't know how to fix it." And it's a merry-go-round, the merry-go-round of investigation, medication, operation. And then
Yes.
it just keeps on going. So what I love about orthobionomy is that it actually taps into our own health system. We are blessed when we are made with a system that is self-healing. Wait a second, I'll just turn my phone off because it's going to ding and bing. We are a self-healing mechanism. So I just want you to think about, if you've got grandkids, you'll know exactly what I mean. But if you can remember back to a time when you had a bruise, a cut, a break, an operation, an infection, and I know that your self-healing mechanism is working because you're still here.
Yeah. Yep. 100%.
And so our bodies heal. And I remember early on in my nursing training, I used to listen to Life Matters, which was a really great show on the ABC way back then. And the interviewer was interviewing a doctor who had been a prisoner of war in Changi.
Oh, wow.
And he saw the most horrific things happen to people, and starvation and cold and all sorts of stuff going on, and people would get appendicitis and terrible things happen. And he,
Yes.
as a doctor, had no facility to help them except, pat their brow, held their hand. And he said what amazed him was how people recovered from things that he had been told in medical school were death sentences. And yes, some of those people did die, but other people recovered. And that got him on a journey of just starting to discover what's really going on in the body. What have we been told that's not true? And that got me thinking. I was a young woman. I had injuries, and my injuries were starting to plague me, and I was getting treatment. I'd tried every letter of the alphabet, and I still wasn't well. And then I got to the stage where my hands didn't work anymore. So I had neck injuries that were transferring into my shoulders, into my arms, and then into my hands. So it was, a long time, 20, 30 years that this had been going on. And that's when I discovered orthobionomy. And within 3 visits to this osteopath who was doing this super, super gentle work. Now, any of you had remedial massage?
I do it, and I do it old school.
It hurts. It hurts. I just recently had a remedial massage at a retreat that I was at, and I ended up saying, "Oh, can you do this little thing?" And I showed her how to do an orthobionomy isometric, and my shoulder and my neck just all of a sudden let go of the. And she had been working me for about 5 minutes, and I was like, "I can't take any." Orthobionomy is an osteopathic-based treatment. It works with our own self-healing mechanism, talks to the master controller, the central nervous system, lets it know what's going on, gives it enough information so that it can figure it out, And then it goes, oh, that doesn't work very well. Let's sort that out now. And it immediately changes stuff. And it doesn't mean it's going to be perfect straight away, but it starts on the journey to self-healing. And what I love about that journey is that it is a gradual process, but it happens quite quickly. And the body can self-regulate. So it doesn't necessarily have to go back to that bad habit it was at before, which is what I see a lot with other modalities, is the body returns. And you probably see that with your kinesiology. Once the nervous system gets the message, got the message, thanks for the reminder, we can get on with it now.
Yes, absolutely. And I find that especially with pain things, if I don't treat the brain, yeah, it's more likely to come back. So there's nearly always, in my terminology, survival patterns or PTSD or some sort of trauma that's in there, that if you don't sort of start unraveling that, then it will always come back.
Always,
Yeah.
always. And so that's what I love about orthobiony. It's really gentle, it's fast, it's easy, and I give people self-care to do at home. And I say to my clients, I have a 300% guarantee. And they go, oh, really? And I go, yeah. 100% of the people who do 100% of the work get 100% of the result.
Beautiful.
So if you want to be one of those to get your 300% guarantee, let's get you started on some really good and functional self-care.
Nice. Nice. Now, you recently had a little bit of a back upset. Do you mind me chatting about what you used to help your pain recently?
No, go ahead. Yes.
So, in relation to the carnivore?
Yes.
Yeah, because a lot of people, and especially, naturopath of 30 years, a lot of naturopaths are out there sort of decrying the fact that there's absolutely no benefits of doing something like that. And even in your post, I was sort of reading all the things and thinking, okay, this is pretty interesting. It's an interesting time on the planet when, again, we have to think about what we've been told, where the information came from, where the belief systems came from, whether it's actually based on fact or science or fiction because of some political motives. So, yeah, so what was your little experience there?
So my experiment of one was conducted because I have an ankle injury. It's a long-term ankle injury. I've had it for 11, 12 years, and it has restricted my movement forward at my ankle. And if anyone's had a broken ankle or a sprained ankle, you'll know exactly how you start to walk like a weirdo with a sore ankle. Well, I've been doing it for 12 years, and I'd got so used to my pattern, I didn't realize that my glutes were not actually working. I was using my hip to move my foot forward,
Oh,
and
wow.
I ended up with gluteal tendinopathy, you don't want it,
Yeah.
and bursitis. And healers sometimes can't heal themselves, and I was one of them. I'd been putting up with this. I'd been doing all the stuff. I'd been doing all the things I knew. It wasn't getting better. I was really on a clean diet. I was doing all the stuff. And I'd been also been watching people that I highly respect, like Jordan Peterson, Michaela Peterson, and Dr. Artis, and Dr. Ken Berry, and a few other interesting types. And they were talking about carnivore and how the benefits. And this particular day, I hadn't slept for about 3 days. My pain was off the scale. I could not stand up. And I just went, that's it. Going carnivore, completely cold turkey, just with what was in the refrigerator. And so I only had supplies for 3 days. After 3 days, I had about a 50% decrease in my inflammation in my hip. That got my attention, and I thought, okay, I'm going to do this for a month. After a week, I'd got about 70% of my pain down to a low roar. I was able to get back to the gym and start doing some things because I couldn't do anything much at the gym. I was miserable. So after a week with 70% improvement, I thought, right, I'm definitely in for a month. After a month, I still oh, that tw you know that 80-20 rule? That last 20% has been the bit that's been keeping me on the carnivore. I did 3 months of carnivore and then just got to that stage where I wanted crunch, I wanted flavor, I wanted texture. I was like, going crazy, just eating meat. And I broke. I got the flu, or an infection of some sort. I had a high fever and I wasn't feeling well for a couple of days.
You might have had a detox being on carnivore as well.
But after 3 months, I think I would have had it earlier.
Oh, not necessarily. It can take at least 2 years to pull the plant toxins out of the body. And I've seen some really interesting side effects when people are releasing the oxalates and stuff like that. Absolutely. Yeah,
Okay, so
there's a massive area to look into with oxalate dumping and things like that.
okay, all right. We'll have another conversation about this. So I had high fever. I felt like rubbish. So I did what I normally do when I get a fever. I gave myself a false fever. I had a really hot bath. I dressed up in every bit of warm clothing I could. I had two hot water bottles, three doonas, my dressing gown, the whole kit and caboodle, and I went to bed and sweated it out. And also started using some nicotine patches. Within 48 hours, I was done and dusted. But when I fasted for that whole time. I just had warm, salty water. That was all I had.
Beautiful.
And then once I started, and I did not eat until I was hungry. And the first thing I wanted was a toasted ham semich. And did I have any bread in the house? No, I hadn't eaten bread for 3 months. But I did scrounge around in the freezer and I found a frozen gluten-free hot cross bun. And so I slathered up with about a quarter of an inch of butter each side, put the ham on, a bit of cream cheese and a teeniest little bit of relish. And it went down really well. That was all I needed that day. But then the next day I had a craving for a spaghetti carbonara. And I'd been so long since I'd cooked spaghetti because I'd been on keto for a long time. It took me about 5 minutes just to find where I'd stored the pasta, found it, made
Oh,
myself my
funny.
spaghetti carbonara, and totally enjoyed it. And that was when I put the post up. It's like, okay, where to from here? Am I still carnivore? Am I off carnivore? And that's what the post that you saw, because it was like, I don't know what my next step was. So I sort of just ate what my body felt like for a week and it deteriorated quite quickly. So I got
Interesting.
back to probably not quite my 70%, probably 60, like a little bit worse than my 70%. And I just made a decision, okay, I'm going to stick pretty much to carnivore as best I can, and I'm going to see where it takes me. I'm not religious about it, but I am observational. I believe my body speaks to me, it tells me what it needs. And so with 3 months off glucose, anything that would spike my glucose, I feel fairly confident that my body can tell me what, apart from the ham sandwich and the spaghetti carbonara. Oh, and the next night I made spaghetti bolognese, but I only did one serving of spaghetti for a four serving of spaghetti bolognese. So I downgraded the carbs quite a bit. So yeah, it was like, where to from here? So I'd love to hear your.
So I've been using carnivore with clients for a couple of years because one of my mates in New Zealand, she's been a really good therapist for the same length as me, 30 years. And so going back a couple of years ago, she had accidentally moved, well, she moved from a big property where they had heaps of storage to a place where they pretty much had like a camp fridge. So therefore their food was limited and she just stopped buying fruit and veggies for a while.
Yes,
And
because they
what
take
ended
up a
up
lot of
at
space.
pardon?
They take up a lot of space.
Yeah, so she ended up, they ended up deciding that they would just budget the meat and then they would cook on the campfire each night. So they were just accidentally doing carnivore. They both her and her partner, both ended up having quite big oxalate dumping symptoms. But she didn't know what that was because 30 years ago, when you do naturopathy, the only thing you find about oxalates, for example, and that's just one of the plant toxins it can be, but oxalates are sharp little spiky nano-sized nasty things that build up in your kidneys and can cause kidney stones. They can build up in your big toes and cause gout. But we now know they're so tiny that they can cross any membrane of the body. They can go into the brain. They can live around the heart. They can build up in the spinal cord. So she'd had a really grumpy spine for about 8 months, 8 years. She moved back to New Zealand with lots of stress about 10, 12 years ago, lots of family stuff going on. So she, even though she was trying to keep her health under control, she didn't actually realize what it was when she started getting the oxalate dumping. And then she started muscle testing, and it muscle tested up with kinesiology as a as withdrawal from something. And she thought, what could I be withdrawing from? And just because she's got all of these huge books of checklists and things, oxalates showed up. And she thought, I don't have kidney stones. What can this be about? So then she started doing some research into oxalates. And that's when she sent me a big 2 hour podcast to listen to with Sally K. Norden. And and that's when I went, right, interesting. So I have zero guilt now if I have no veggies. You know, if we have a snag and a steak for dinner, I have zero guilt. If I have egg dip, you know, and something for lunch, you know, I have zero guilt. Because it's really interesting. So, with my clients, it tests up for people with, say, endometriosis. People, a lot of beta blockers can actually destroy the microbiome that allow your body to release oxalates. If we
Oh,
don't have enough
interesting.
magnesium and activated B6, they're both really important. And it needs to be citrates, the citrates, magnesium citrate, calcium citrate, potassium citrate, sodium citrate, they all help to bind oxalates and take them out of the body. But it's one of those things, if we've got an oxalate issue, and I love her website because she's not, you know, like a lot of the big universities, if you ask, you know, them about oxalates, what they'll say is, yes, spinach and almonds have the highest amount of oxalates of anything in the planet, but as part of a healthy diet, they're really healthy. But not if you've got oxalate poisoning. It can be a poison in your body if your body can't eliminate it. So, yeah, it can build up anywhere.
Interesting, interesting. So, yes, it's certainly been a journey, and it's not for the faint-hearted. You need to know what your goal is
Yes.
with carnivore. And I think that helps keep me on track now. Now that I know what happens as soon as I go off. As soon as I go off the carnivore, I know what happens, and
Yeah.
I'm not happy with that. And so, I've got my little system that seems to work for me. And then about once a week, I take myself out for a meal. And like on Sunday night, I just thought, right, I don't feel like cooking. I'm really hungry. I know that I'm going to, start wanting stuff before my meal's cooked. So I just took myself to the local club and ordered a double cooked pork belly. And it came with this beautiful looking broccolini and some beans and some roasted pineapple. And I just ate, I mean, because I look pretty healthy, I look like someone who has a healthy diet, right?
Yes,
So I just ate the pork. And the girl came around and looked at my plate and looked at me and she said, "Would you like a doggy bag for the other bits?" And I went, "No, thank you." And it was so easy.
Yeah, I know it doesn't have to be challenging, does it? One of the things I do with kinesiology is ask how many meals per week the body would like out of 21 to be pure carnivore. And then people always say, oh, I eat plenty of meat. And I said, no. A carnivore meal means that there is no plant protein in there. So people don't get it. They think they're having a carnivore diet if they're eating a steak with their big fruit and veggies. That is not a carnivore meal. A carnivore meal, like the classic is BBB and E, beef, bacon, butter, and eggs. You know, so sort of because beef and cabbage actually for vegetarians have the highest amount of glutamine per meal than anything else. So, you know, beef and cabbage, that's why cabbage is so good for the gut. You know, remember the old cabbage juices and things like that for the last 20, 30 years it's been. And remember the big people that make up those big soups with lots of cabbage and stuff in them, you know, back in the 90s
And
and early 2000s.
yeah, and think of all those cold European countries where the only things that grew and that they could store through winter was cabbage and potato, and so they had sauerkraut and they had all sorts of things with
Yes.
cabbage with caraway seeds, but always with butter, and probably with bacon fat as well, because you know. I look, when I was a kid, Mum had a lard container, and when she cooked a roast or cooked bacon or anything like that, the fat was poured off. It had a strainer, it would take all the crunchy bits out, and that lard always smelled good. It had a little lid. It was just kept in the kitchen, not in the refrigerator, and we stopped doing that. You know,
Yeah.
it's, I think
Is that the same as tallow? You know, tallow's the big thing at the moment.
Yeah, so tallow and lard are a little bit similar. Lard is probably the poor man's version. Tallow is, they take the fat, particularly from around the heart and the kidneys, and they render it down two or three times and then strain it each time, and that's when
Right.
you end up with tallow. So it's a bit more refined. Just taking the fat off your roast beef or your roast pork or your bacon is sort of the crude and rudimentary version, but it still worked.
Yeah. And what's wrong
People
with
used
that?
to, yeah, they used to
Yeah.
have, when they were poor, they had bread and dripping.
Yes. Yes.
Basically, yeah, that was it, bread and dripping.
Yes.
And older people, you know, sort of like 20, 30 years older than me, they would talk with great joy about bread and dripping. How much they enjoyed it. And I could never get it because we didn't ever have it. But yeah, we
Yes.
need to go back.
So you do sessions with people both online and in clinic. Obviously, you're in your beautiful clinic there.
Yes, I do. I do sessions online and in the clinic, and I'm loving the online sessions. I started them because of, you know, 5 years ago things happened,
Yes.
and 5 years ago is when my ankle finally collapsed. It was perfect timing, and I spent a couple of years on the couch because I couldn't stand up, I couldn't walk, I could do one session a day. That was all I had capacity for, and then I was exhausted. And it was I did a couple that for a couple of years, and then I thought, you know what? I've got so much wisdom and so much experience in here. It's a shame that it's just all locked up in time inside my tiny little house. And I decided I wanted to go online, didn't know how to do it, but I found a coach, a couple of coaches, and eventually found the one that works for me. And I'm doing online sessions. But what I love about the online sessions is that the person that I'm working with is the practitioner.
Right, yes.
I'm the coach.
Yeah.
And so I guide them. And as I'm coaching, I have to embody what their body is feeling. And so it's almost like a transference. I've got so much better with my languaging when I'm talking with them, and about sensation and whatever. And I ask them to, you know, do some movement so they can feel what the area is that we're working with. We do a release, self-care usually, and then I get them to do another movement and they go, wow, that's so much better. And then they realize, first of all, how important the self-care is, but secondly, they're empowered. They now know how to help themselves.
Yes.
And it just makes my heart sing
Which is
to.
totally different to standard medical pain management, where really it's about how many medications you're going to take and what's your next operation or Botox or, cortisone injection or whatever, all
Yeah.
of which have got their big side effects and people just end up getting worse and worse
Yeah.
with time.
Yeah. And so people get better and better. And it's, you know, healing is progressive. Like, it's not a straight line. We'd like to like it to be like that, but it isn't. It's a bit
Yes.
more wriggly. And so as one area heals, quite often something else will go, hey, excuse
Hit
me.
me now.
Yeah, I've been talking to you for ages, but no one's been listening. And now that that other person's got kept quiet, now it's my turn. And so we slowly but surely work through all of the angst and injuries that a person has suffered. Because sometimes injuries occur because it's emotional. Sometimes injuries occur because of accidents. Sometimes injuries occur because of overuse. And so we slowly but surely deal with all those patterns, be they emotional, be they physical, psychological. We deal with all of those as we go, and it is absolutely beautiful watching somebody start to blossom.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are a couple of little tips to let people have before we say goodbye?
Okay, so the best tip is that less is more. And if your body, if you can find a position of comfort, let's just work with something that's nearly everybody has. Let's work with a shoulder thing. Nearly everybody has those two rocks at the top of their shoulders. We spend so much time doing this.
Yes.
And so this is a really simple one. So you just pop your hand, your arm over the back of your chair. And so you're held by your elbow, just one arm, held by your elbow. Pop your hand on your breastbone. And then you're going to gently turn from the breastbone, not from your shoulders, turn from your breastbone. So that's why your hand is here to help you. You're going to turn away from that shoulder to the point where it feels really comfy and supportive and safe. And you just rest there. And we're going to wait for the body to let us know it's done, which is usually a yawn, a sigh, a deep breath. Sometimes it's a tummy gurgle. And then we're just going to come out and see how that shoulder feels now.
Yeah, looser.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's just one move, because with the shoulders, of course, it's, we rely on the neck. The shoulder's a very complex joint because it does so much. It's got so much movement, and it's got a lot of movement, but we've sacrificed stability for movement. And so we need to get the movement patterns back correct and the stability back correct, which is coming from the feet and the pelvis, not just the neck and shoulders. So we've just opened the envelope and taken a peek to see what color the paper is. So yeah, it's by doing less, by finding positions of comfort, allowing the body to speak, and then coming back and rechecking and then congratulating the body. Because we've got to remember the nervous system. I hope that you probably got some men on this. The nervous system is very masculine. It likes good, clear instructions. It likes to know what to do. It likes to know that it's done a good job, and it likes to be thanked. And so when you do those little processes each time, the body will and the brain will remember, so that next time when you come back, it's easier every time.
Beautiful. That is absolutely awesome, Vicky. Well, we'll have to have another chat again soon. And
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
reach out to Vicky if you've got some chronic pain that just you're not getting on top of. And yes.
Yes, and one of the things that I'm amazed with, Madonna, is I don't profess to work with fibromyalgia. Like, it's a big issue.
It is.
But all of my clients who have fibromyalgia, when we start working with the central nervous system, settling down their pain responses, calming down their nervous system, and letting their body feel safe in whatever area they need to, they start saying, "You know what? My fibro hasn't flared up for weeks." And I go, "Oh, really?"
Amazing, amazing. Isn't that
So,
great to feel that, improvement?
yeah, and it's not something that I work with, but when we work with the body, it gives it a chance to take the pressure off the areas where it's really feeling it. And surprisingly, a whole lot of other things will get better. Menstrual issues, like when I start working with people in their pelvis with it, because they've got lower back issues, suddenly they start saying, "Oh, my period pain's gone away." Love it.
Yes, poor blood supply. And how many women go and end up having things like hysterectomies, and it does not get rid of their pain? So they
Oh,
have no idea that the inflammation isn't just an organ, it's an area of the body.
yeah. Or even worse, they get diagnosed with endometriosis and they go in for an exploratory and they scrape stuff off from everywhere. They can never get all of it. And then they've got the trauma of the surgery and all the adhesions as well. They've still got endometriosis and they're no better. In fact, they're probably worse. And so, yeah, working with those sorts of issues, it's not just skeletal, it's the whole body. Whenever we work with holistic medicine, which you do, Madonna, we see improvements in other areas. It's just
Sure
a
do. Absolutely.
knock-on response, and it's absolutely amazing. So yes, Vicky Tate, spellings on the thing there. And find me on Facebook is probably the easiest way to get through to me, to send me a message and say, hey, I saw you on Madonna's podcast, or send me a message and say, can you work with this? And I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
That is absolutely awesome. Thanks so much, Vicky. You have a fabulous day.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Madonna. It's been lovely to be here.
Okay, bye.